Alright, let's do this.
You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
Hello and welcome to episode 228 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
Jay.
Hello.
And Andy.
Good evening, chaps.
Are we all doing well this fine evening?
Well, I'm doing very well. I am surrounded in sprues, as is my happy place.
I've just been round Matt's house. He's not just surrounded by sprues, he's surrounded by his Sons of Horus tank company.
That's a cool thing to be surrounded by.
Well,
depends which side you're on.
So on today's show, it's quite an exciting one, actually, because over the weekend, at the time of recording, Warhammer World celebrated a special weekend as it was their store anniversary. So they revealed a few cool things, something in particular that I'm really excited about. That we're going to talk about a little bit later on in the show. We have also got a whole bunch of other news bits and bobs. Well, I hope Matt has. He's normally prepared for this. Also, we're going to be talking a bit of Age of Sigmar later on in our top three, because it's widely rumoured that this year we're going to see a new edition of Age of Sigmar with the Dawnbringers coming to an end and all that jazz. So Matt asked us the question on the last podcast, what top three things would we like to see in Age of Sigmar 4th edition? Quite a tough one, Matt, actually.
Really, you think?
Yeah. I could make a list of things I'd like them to keep. But yeah, I've managed to get three together. I know you were struggling Andy.
The question is what you'd like to see in AOS 4. So what you'd like to keep could well be in that list.
Oh, good. Good. So yeah, we're going to be chatting about that later on, and of course we'll end the podcast with the community top three choices as well. But let us start this week with our hobby updates. Now, I've got my imaginary spinning wheel because it was such a firm favorite on the last podcast. I'm spinning it now. Ding 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 ding, and it's landed on Matt.
that was beautiful, Dave.
Ah, thanks. The sound effects was never really my forte, but what have you been up to in the hobby, Matt?
Well, I've been up to all sorts since we last chatted to Duncan a few weeks ago, and maybe some of the Duncan vibe rubbed off, because I've been painting on lots of knights of different types. Mm-hmm. So Deathwing Knights, I've painted a load of Dark Angels. So Games Workshop sent us all a new wave of Dark Angel releases, and oh boy, they are amazing kits. I've really been bitten by the Dark Angels bug. A bit like Jay and his tower, I kind of painted up one model and I'm like, oh, I need to paint more of these. I can take or leave Space Marines, but Dark Angels have really got my kind of hobby juices flowing.
And you painted these up in the really nice bone colour as well.
Yeah, so I mean, Dark Angels are quite nice that you've got quite a variety of colour in the army. You've got the bone for the Death Wing, you've got the black of the Raven Wing, and then you've got the green of the, Green Wing, I guess. But then also, adding into the mix, you've got the purples in the kind of like robes of the inner
companions
circle.
The
companions, yeah. So it's quite nice and gives you a few different textures to work on. For the green armour, I've kind of got a different tact of painting them black and then subtle green highlights, because I think that kind of gives them a bit of a, I don't know, it's a transition between the 30k scheme and the 40k scheme, isn't it? But the bone armor, I've really enjoyed doing. I'm really tempted to do a Stormcast Storm Host in Dark Angels colours, because I think that'd work really well on them. So yeah, I might, that they're rumoured to be obviously in the 4th edition starter box, so I might start painting some up because I think they'd be quite cool. So yes, I've been painting Dark Angels. I have also been painting some Bretonian Knights.
Nice.
So Games Workshop sent us the new Knights of the Realm on foot, and these are gorgeous kits in every sense of the word. Jay, you were around early, I forgot to even show you these models. They're very, very cool. Now, they take a little time to build. and an even longer time to paint, but it's well worth the effort. I've gone for, I was torn on how to paint my Bretonians, and in the end, I have gone for the logic of the Duke's kind of forces will all have his colours. And then the Knights Errant, they are young knights from the various families of Bretonnia, so they would have their family colouring on them. And then the Questing Knight and the Grail Knight would then have the honour to wear their own heraldry. So essentially that means all my Knights of the Realm will be red and blue, but with different checker patterns on them for that. And on the models that I've painted, I've managed to put them in different quadrants. And yeah, they're so nice. Obviously, you know, you can paint your Bretonnians how you want it. You could give every single knight in your army their own heraldry. That would take a very long time to paint, but it'd look awesome. Mm-hmm. So yeah, highly recommend these kits. I built them with swords and shields, but the nice thing about them, because the unit option, you can actually give them sword, shields and great weapons. Right. It's not as if you need to build one or the other, because they can be armed with everything. You know, for WYSIWYG, you might want the odd great weapon in there, but it doesn't really matter too much.
Yeah, that's it. You can just sort of mix them in, can't you, really?
Yeah, exactly. But I wanted the shields because you've got that nice flat surface then for the icon on.
Yeah.
Which is nice. But yeah, they're a bit of a random one. A lot of people would rather take the peasants who are cheap and don't cause panic for your knights. But, you know, there's something to be said for a unit of, like, you know, 18 knights with great weapons who... Obviously, they don't lose the impact of the lances on the charge. They can just chop through a unit for multiple turns on the go. So I think there is a nice role for them in the army. And then finally, I have been building and painting some Solar Exilia. Now, Jay did see these earlier, and the tanks were a lot bigger than you expect them to be, aren't they?
They are. I mean, in some cases, like, you know, they're longer than a Space Marine Legion, like, Land Raider or Rhino. They've got a sort of different proportion, but a very different sort of aesthetic. They look really, really nice. They've got definitely got their own style.
So yes, I've been painting these up as Chthonian Headhunters. Unfortunately, didn't quite have enough time to get these fully painted for the article with everything else going on. So over the next few weeks, I'm going to get these painted up, and I'm going to try some experiments with weathering on them as well. I might steal Jay's Dark Oath drowning technique.
Well, I stole it from Richard Gray, so
well, that's a good person to steal painting advice from, so yeah, we're gonna try that. I might amend it a little bit and do it with an airbrush, but yeah, that's next on my painting scheme. I'm painting them to match my epic scale Chthonian Headhunters, so I have basically just replicated the scheme and scaled it up. So though where on that one it's a lot of dry brushing, this one I might actually have to paint some like highlights and stuff because they're a tad bigger than the little ones. So yeah, it's been a heavy few weeks of hobby.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, you've been really busy. Who shall we go to next? Let's go over to Andy. What have you been up to, Andy?
So I finished off painting the Horns of Hashut for my Warcry Kill Team Challenge. They were good fun. Thankfully, February had 29 days in this year, and I needed it because I was finishing them off on the 29th day. I finished them off. They were really good fun. What else have I been up to? I went to a purple sparkly unicorn event, as did you guys. And I took my Ossiarch Bone Reapers. So I had to glue some magnets onto the bottom of a couple of air bases. Despite the fact that I painted the army back in 2020, I think it was. Still magnetizing the day before an event, you know, that's how it goes. Let's see. I played Dave in the first game.
You did play me.
Now, I always make a joke that we always play each other in events, and sometimes that is fixed. I'm not going to lie. On this particular occasion, though, it wasn't fixed. It was just random pairings, which was great fun. It was nice to keep up that tradition.
Andy's always looking for the easy win. That's what it is.
A warm-up game.
You say that, but I had to work for it in that game.
Yeah.
That game was close.
So I unfortunately, I've not played much Age of Sigmar recently, so this was the first time I'd really got to grips with the, I'm going to say, new General's Handbook. It's been out for ages. This particular mission, you were kind of hindered if you were scoring the highest at the end of each turn, which I was for the first, I think, three or four turns, which meant Andy was taking objectives away from where I was comfortably holding them. I think it was like the second to last turn you jumped into lead, I think, didn't you, Andy? And then you ran away with it in the end, I think.
Yeah, I think it ended up being about 14-12, something like that. So it was very close. So I played three games and then won the Best Sports Award, which was really, really, really nice.
Congratulations, Andy.
Thank you.
Deserved winner of that award.
Yeah, I was going to say, thanks, Dave. I think that was my first event since we went to the 40k doubles last July, I think it was.
Wow.
It's been a while since I've been at an event, but that was great fun. And then what else have I been up to? I built a couple more guys for the next kill team for March's pledge, which is the Hand of the Archon. So they're currently sat on my painting desk as we speak. I think that's about it, really. It's been a relatively relaxed February for me.
You say relaxed, there's quite a bit you've listed there, Andy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe March and April I'll be doing even more. That'd be nice.
Well, I think that transitions nicely into myself, because I too attended that event, played Andy in game one. I took along my Skaven. I fancied taking them out again. It was a real kind of fun and fluffy, not very competitive list. But I had great fun against Andy. Game two, I played some more Bone Reapers because I'd not got enough of those. had a great game. And then finished off the event against James and his beautiful Fire Slayers. I came second from bottom, which is disappointing, because if you're going to come that low, you might as well go home with a wooden spoon. But I was pipped to it. I actually thought I did okay. I just kept losing in like the final turn or so. Apart from the last game.
Did you just say you did okay, you just kept losing? I just kept losing.
Yeah. I think maybe with a bit more practice of the General's Handbook and the battle tactics, I'd have been a bit more prepared. Obviously. But it was a great event. The Unicorns always put on a good show. And I really, really enjoyed it. And it was great to play some Sigmar as well. Away from that, it's been a very orky kind of few weeks for me. Can't remember if I mentioned it on the last show, but I fully painted an orc war boss in Megarama, which was a joy to paint, and really pleased with how he looks. Since then, I've also painted a Deathcopter, and I'm about, I don't know, 75% of the way into five orc boys. I've got till the end of this month to get another 15 boys, two copters and a death dread painted to meet the Warhammer crew, get a combat patrol painted target. So that's looking a little bit tight, but I'm hoping I might just sneak it. Maybe on that last day like you, Andy, I'll be frantically doing some bases. But they've been really fun to paint. I really want to take them out for a game as well. Trumping at the bit to get them on the board and get a game of 40k on the go. Aside from that, I started a new series of posts over on the website talking about my hobby achievements, very much inspired by Andy and his regular monthly contributions. And as part of that, as kind of the, not highlight, maybe the concluding part of that article was I decided to finally paint some scenery after years of having it on my hobby resolutions and never actually achieving it. So what I've done to begin with, is I've got one of the old 2x2 Imperialis boards. I think that was the right
Sixth
range.
Imperialis,
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've kind of got all my 40k scenery out and I've kind of been jumbling together and sort of playing with layouts, because I want to find a layout which is playable, but there's lots of scope for objectives and gameplay and stuff, and then get it all built and painted and glued. So it'll be a static board. It won't be something that's modular, but I really want to kind of go to town making it look lived in and stuff. And You know, to be honest, it's probably going to end up being more of a display board than anything else. But if I can sneak some games of Necromunda or Kill Team on there, I know it's not the right size, but, you know, we'll give it a go. So I've started doing that, and I'm hoping by the end of the month to have the layout completed, have everything undercoated, and hopefully some paint on the board itself. And I think that is me, I think, actually. Can't think of anything else, but I've been building a few of Rourke units. I've been building the Megadobs, which is still a great kit to build and really easy as well. I was expecting it to be a bit of a challenge considering its age, but
what are you equipping with? Kit.
Twin kill saws. there's no point giving guns to orcs, is there? Just go all out into combat. So yeah, twin kill saws. They seem pretty tasty. I'm sure when the orc book drops, which we'll talk about later, the kill source would be the worst option, but never mind. That's what I've gone for because it looks really cool. Fair,
a lot of the profiles haven't changed when codexes have come out.
That's very true. So yeah, that's me, and that just leaves one member of the team to pick on, and that's you, Jay. What have you been up to?
Yeah, so I've been doing quite a lot of hobbying actually. So work continues on the Blood Angels Mastodon, probably one of the biggest models I've ever painted. I think the biggest model, I painted a Tau Titan, a supremacy suit, which was one of the largest ones. This is on a par with that. But obviously it's taken a lot longer. There's a lot of detail on the inside that I've been painting. And, I'm trying to split it up into segments. So I've done like a side panel, a top panel, and then I find that I don't get so burnt out painting it because it just feels like you've completed a little bit of the model. I take it all the way up to like even doing the weathering and the chipping on that panel before moving on to the next one. So that's coming along. I've got two panels left to do on the outside, and then I've got all the sponsons and the little turret on top and gold details and things and lenses and whatnot to paint out. But I'm loving it. It's brilliant. Such a nice model. But it's been on my painting desk now for a few weeks. To sort of help not get burnt out painting it, I put this down. So I've not actually painted anything on the Mastodon in probably the last 5 or 6 days. And instead, I've been working on a couple of other units. So I've been painting up, sort of repainting some Custodian Guard, which I'll be taking with me to the event in a couple of weeks' time at Warhammer World. And I've been converting up a new shield captain to lead them, this sort of allied contingent. And I've taken the blades from the, I think it's a blade champion, this Custodian Blade Champion, and mixed that with some pieces from like a regular Custodian Guard squad to make my shield captain with Meridian Blades. He's turned out quite nice. And I'm just sort of going back to my Custodian Guard and taking the time to pick out the details like the leather and the gems and the different sort of tassels and whatnot that hang off of the Custodian armor. And then I've also been on a bit of a Bushido thing at the moment as well. So me and my brothers have been playing quite a few games of Bushido recently, which if you're not aware, it's a small sort of miniatures skirmish game set in a fantasy version of Japan. I think they're called the Jawa Isles or something like that. So it's loosely based on sort of Japanese sort of historical Pokemon samurai warriors
stuff, isn't it, as well?
yeah but it's got all like demons in and undead and a fantasy element to it, but it's a really really nice game. So you know, we've been playing it, so rather than points you use rice to sort of cost out your army, so we've been playing 70 rice games, which gets you about 4 or 5 figures in your army. And this can be a variety of things from like support pieces who have access to what's called key abilities, so almost like magical abilities. You get some models that are equipped with range weapons like bows and even rifles. And then of course you get your warriors, your samurai and ashigaru and that kind of thing as well. And so we've really been getting into that. It's a really, really nice system. The combat mechanics are really, really cool. So you use D6 dice and you roll a number of D6 dice for various things, such as fighting in melee, firing a bow or sort of using a key ability. But when you engage in close combat, there's a mechanic where you see who's got the initiative, so who will be attacking first. But a melee exchange occur sort of simultaneously. So you'll have a number of dice that you roll, and you have to secretly decide how many of those dice you want to assign to an attack and how many of those dice you want to assign to a defense. Because in a melee exchange, you'll be attacking if you've got the initiative, but then your opponent, if they survive, will get to attack you back. So yes, you could go all in if you've got the initiative and throw all your dice at your attack. But if you don't kill the model you're fighting, you've got to be prepared to take a hit back.
So sure, it's really, an ancient Japanese proverb, the best form of defense is a katana through the head.
Yeah. So it's really good. So we were really feeling the sort of Bushido vibe. So I took I put the Blood Angels red down, and I picked up some other paints to paint up a Shiho clan. So I painted up about 10 models or so, and I'll get them up on Twitter this week. I've just not had a chance to put them on Twitter yet. But these are like these were the ruling clan of the island. And whilst their lord was away, a rival clan came in and took the throne from them. All of their sort of samurai of fighting age sacrificed themselves to let all the younglings and older folk escape. And now this clan fights a guerrilla war against this usurper clan. So their samurai aren't as great as other people's samurai, but they've learned to be a bit more stealthy and a bit more sort of, maybe not the most honorable of fighting techniques to get the advantage. It's really, really cool. So I painted all them. I actually got the entire warband painted. So like I say, about 9 or 10 models painted. I'll get those pictures up. But they're on the shelf again now, and it's cracking again. 2 weeks now till the event at Warhammer World to get the Blood Angels and Custodes ready.
Excellent. You have been very busy, Jay. We all have been. Some great hobby updates there. Now we've got quite a bit to get through, including the all the reveals from the store anniversary over at Warhammer World. But before we get into that, let's take a pause and we'll come back with this week's news. So, Matt, what do we have in this week's news?
Well, I'm not going to chat about the stuff that we saw related to the previews. So we'll talk about it in the next half of the show. But there's still quite a bit of news that we've seen outside of that, kicking off with some rather tasty Kroot-related releases. The Kroot Lone Spear, which seems to be a new kind of character with a grenade on a stick riding a big lizard. Jay, this is different, isn't it?
Well, I mean, up until now, everything we've seen of the Kroot has been some sort of Kroot derivative. You know, they've got this really cool backstory where they sort of have managed to shape their genetic evolution based on the prey they've hunted and the DNA they've consumed, and they sort of have sort of shaped their evolutionary sort of path. So most of all of the Kroot sort of units have been some form of Kroot sort of base genome almost. And what we've seen here is something different for the first time. This salamander with a weird spelling, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a calamandras, which I'm sure is a distant offshoot.
Yeah, really, really sleek, predatory type silhouette to this model. Really sort of plays on the lone sort of spear, lone hunter sort of theme for it. It's a winner with me. I really like it.
You know what it reminds me of? You know the bit in Attack of the Clones where Obi-Wan's like riding a lizard?
Yeah. Yes, you're right. Yeah.
It's got chameleon like skin as well, isn't it? I think it's described in the article.
Yeah, and it just looks, you know, a lot different to other things we've seen previously for the Kroot. And you know, it's going to be quite it's nice to have the variety, isn't it? I mean, that's something that's really nice about the Tau army as a whole, really, is that you get a lot of different variety from an aesthetic point of view. And it's really, really nice to see the Kroot sort of sub-faction expanded in this way. And it does sort of make you think, going forward in a few years' time, maybe, when we see other auxiliary races expanded, the Vespid, for example.
Mm. Yeah, I like the fact that they've doing this big Kroot release. And it leaves a lot of the core rangers are in a pretty good shape now, which gives them a bit of freedom to do more like side faction stuff.
Yeah, I hope so as well. Because I mean, that's it. If you look across the setting, you know, we talked just about Vesper Den, but I mean, one that jumps out straight to me is Eldar Exodites. You know, I'd love to see that faction explored and our model range for that, even if it's just like what we're seeing with the crew, you know, a component of an existing codex. But I think you're right, Matt. I mean, I always think to myself, you know, they've done Space Marines to death. We've had so many new primary Space Marine models over the years. There can't possibly be any more Space Marines. Now, surely now they've got time to turn to these other sort of factions and things. But then we've just had a cracking Dark Angels release. And you think, well, actually, you know, I'd love to see some new Blood Angels. I'd love to see some new Space Wolves. Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, so that is presumably alongside the second wave of Kroot releases. I don't think they're going to be too far off now, which is really exciting. Sorry. We also saw a trailer this week for a new Warhammer Plus show. I think it's safe to say a lot of the Warhammer Plus like animated content has been coming out a little bit slower than I'd have liked to. I think when it came out, the big kind of like, I guess, appeal of it was the animated stuff, where I think that's maybe hit the back burner a little bit. But there is a new show coming called Broken Lance, which is all about knights beating seven shades of Norn oil out of each other, which is really exciting.
Bretonians, is it?
I don't know, Imperial Knights.
Imperial Knights, okay, right.
Yeah. So big mechanized robot knights punching each other, which really does appeal to me. Now, we've also got some interesting video game 40K news this week as well. The possibly the most bizarre crossover I've ever seen is the Warhammer 40,000 expansion to Power Wash Simulator. I never thought I'd be saying these words on the show.
You know, when you play like Warhammer Fantasy role-playing game, and you know, you go in and your first sort of impression of that game, oh yeah, I'm gonna, oh, the 40k one's probably more, I'm gonna be a Space Marine Death Watch sergeant with power. Oh, actually no, you get to choose from these professions, and it's like, you know, rat catcher, bookkeeper, that kind of thing. And I imagine somewhere in one of the Crucible 7's role-playing game, there's a like a power wash tech marine.
Yeah, well, you play a Adeptus Mechanicus janitor, I guess.
Yeah.
You clean Rogal Dawns, Imperial Knight shrines, and even the surface of Mars itself. I'm not going to lie, I'm tempted to download this. I believe Power Wash Simulator has also recently had VR support added. So being able to see, well, clean a Rogal Dawn in VR does appeal to me.
Yeah,
I mean, I haven't cleaned my own car, but a Rogal Dawn I'd do.
They did a Final Fantasy VII expansion not that long ago. They seem to be tapping into all the franchises, but yeah, this is an odd one.
Well, Dave, that segues quite nicely into the next bit of news: the official Call of Duty collaboration. Yeah, so
this at least makes a bit more sense.
So, and that, I mean, does it announced today as part of the Season 2 Reloaded update for Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3? I'm like a proper podcaster here. Yeah, there's some kind of like Call of Duty bundle. I don't play Call of Duty. I'm not down with the kids. But it looks like it's skins and weapons inspired by the Warhammer 40,000 universe. Yeah, so if you want your character to look like an Adeptus Sororitas or a Space Marine or maybe a plucky Cadian Trooper, you can now play as them within Call of Duty. But wait, that's not all. Some old maps have also been remastered for this limited event. I'm sure if you're a fan of Call of Duty, you'll be super excited. I haven't got the hand-to-eye coordination to play Call of Duty now. I don't know if you guys do.
No, I've not played Call of Duty for a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while since I played it, but yeah, playing as a Space Marine might be quite cool.
Yeah, so yeah, 11th of March, the Space Marines Tracer Pack comes out, followed by the 14th of March for the Sisters of Battle and Astra Militarum Pack. So yeah, get downloading. I'm a bit sad this is. It looks like it's just like the, I don't know what the terminology is, so you'll be laughing at me if you're a Call of Duty fan, but like the deathmatch events. It doesn't actually feature any Warzone skins, I don't believe, which is a shame, because I'd have played that.
That's the Battle Royale mode, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it includes those.
But no, we know Space Marines in Warzone, unfortunately. But, you know, if you want to shoot people as a Space Marine, that is your go-to. So, yeah, again, I was not expecting an official Space Marines crossover. It does show how big the hobby's getting, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah. I mean, when you sort of see, we had the Magic the Gathering card set a while back. You've had stamp collections. You've got the Amazon sort of TV series or whatever's happening there. You're right. It's definitely got much more reach now, hasn't it, than it used to?
It has. And you know what? You know, a lot of kids play Call of Duty, and this could be their into the hobby as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it's not a bad thing. Yeah, okay. Maybe it's a little bit, you know, after our time, but I think it's certainly a good thing for the hobby. You know what else is a good thing for the hobby? Massive artillery tanks. As listeners will know, I'm a massive fan of the Solar Exilia, and you know, being able to paint up the new army box has been fun. But you know what the army box hasn't got? Massive ordnance weapons. And there's a new dual kit coming on the way for the Basilisk and the Medusa. Now, in the 40k era, those tanks are built around a Chimera chassis. Obviously, the Chimera didn't exist back in Heresy times. So what they do is mount these weapons onto a Land Raider chassis.
Oh, man.
Which is cool. You know, if you think the big chunky, Land Raider, a Lehman Russ chassis.
Ah,
you think a Lehman Russ with a massive siege cannon on it. You know, that's something my Deathcore Krieg would be all over, if I'm perfectly honest. And yeah, it looks like it's a multi-kit. You can either give it the big Colossus cannon, which you guys have faced on my Krieg, or the standard Basilisk cannon, the Earthshaker.
Earthshaker, yeah.
So yeah, really, really cool. What's cool about this one as well, it's got fully molded interior detail, which you're never going to see during a game, but you will know you've got guys inside it and terminals and screens and artillery inside your tank.
You're going to have to try and build it where you can sort of take it apart to see inside. I don't know whether.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to. I wonder if it's.
To try.
So the Colossus, the 40k version for the Deathcore of Krieg, it's kind of on a. The cannons are fitted on like its gimbal thing on the back. I think the Heresy versions, you can probably take off the back segment of it and maybe see inside it.
Right.
Either way, we have to build it so we can do that, because if it's got interior detail, it's got to be seen. I painted the inside of my Titans and no one's seen the inside of them, so it's got to be done here. So yeah, pretty fun. Looking forward to them. Doing a full artillery force for Heresy really appeals to me. Now, in other news, Warhammer Underworlds had a lot of really cool warbands that have not got rules in the current system. Games Workshop seem to be amending this with a new pack, Rivals of the Mirrored City, which actually contains reissues of four old warbands plus brand new card sets for them, letting them compete in the current game environment. What do we think of this, guys?
So this is for, like...
Molag's Mob. We've got the Zarbag Gitz, the Troll one. We've got the Thorns of the Briar Queen, which is the Nighthaunt one. And I've gone blank on the last one. We've got the Skaven, Spike Claws Swarm.
Yeah.
And so you say there's new decks of cards with these as well, a new deck.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously the old decks, it was more of a collectible card game back in the day where you'd get your deck over buying every expansion. And they've kind of discarded that, haven't they? And they've gone more for the Rivals deck, where you get a deck with everything that you need for that faction. So this box contains those four warbands plus all the cards you need, one deck for each of those warbands, which is really cool.
All right, okay. Yeah, no, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it brings those old warbands back into rotation, and you know, we'll see them in sort of tournaments and things. And they're still really cool warbands, even for their age. So to dust them off and get playing with them again is great. It's a shame that you can't buy the cards separately if you've already had that warband. You know, maybe you got it when Underworlds first came out, and
yeah, but
you
I would
really
say,
want to bust them out again.
Do you think it'd be any cheaper if it was just the cards? Probably not so much.
But
a lot of those the plastics haven't been available for a long time. Molag's Mob you can't buy anymore.
Right. Yeah.
And at the end of the day, Games Workshop are a miniatures company, aren't they?
Absolutely, yeah.
But no, it's cool. I hope they kind of do this for the ones that have kind of gone by the wayside. And we've not heard any news of the next edition of Underworlds. I'm sure it is coming. But you know what I'd prefer? Have a yearly, you know, new edition of Underworlds. And then at the 6 month point, bring out one of these boxes with old warbands.
Yeah.
I'd rather that than two starter boxes a year.
Yeah, I prefer that too.
Yeah. That's my big gripe with Underworlds is they rotate the warbands out so quickly. It's yeah, sometimes it's a bit feel bad. So seeing the old ones come back is nice, but I'd like to see more of the old ones come back.
I feel they've learned the lessons throughout Underworlds. You know, it's gone from, if you want to play competitively, you had to buy every warband because the cards were scattered across different boxes. And they realised that was not a great approach. And they've gone to, you buy your rival's deck, you buy your deck. And even in tournament play, you only really need to combine from a couple of decks. You don't need everything. So hopefully they learn that the 6 month release schedule for Underworlds is way, way too quick. And to tone it back a bit.
Yeah.
Another new thing that's being announced today as well is Warhammer Relics. So this is an official merchandise festival, and they've done this with like video games and stuff in the past, where now it looks like there's a dedicated event to merch, and there's been some really cool stuff announced, such as an official, and this is a niche that I didn't know existed, but official Warhammer the Old World cosplay outfits.
That's awesome.
So if you wanted an official greatsword uniform, you can do that and go LARPing in it or go to conventions in it. You know, I think these will sell because there is a very, very like loyal cosplay LARPing kind of faction, and to have officially licensed, you know, outfits and accessories and props, you know, I suspect they're not going to be cheap, but I think people will be up for that.
I definitely can see a massive market for this. Although there was something else that grabbed my attention a bit more than the costumes, Matt.
I've not got that far yet.
I'll let you carry on.
So we've got official cosplay stuff. We've also got from Wicked Brick miniature display cases. So these are basically Perspex boxes with a background in that you can display miniatures in.
Oh, nice.
Which sounds, you know, very, very cool. I know Artis Opus, but I don't know if it's been delivered yet, but they've got a Kickstarter to do like wooden cases. What I like about these is that they're fully transparent and they've got nice kind of artwork in the back of them. So if you've got a particular miniature that you're proud of, want to display on your bookshelf or something, you can get one of these boxes. Now, originally, Wicked Brick did these for Lego, and obviously they've decided to move into 40K and Age of Sigmar. So there's not many details yet of what they are, but I'd be tempted to pick up a few of these and add some lighting and stuff.
I had a quick peek on their website. So the range, I think, is going on at the end of the month. But if you have a look at some of their other, you can have a look at their other cabinets, like you say, for the Lego stuff to get an idea on pricing. And they're not cheap, but if you've got a particular model that you're really, really proud of, it'll look great in one of those. I've got to admit.
I think it'd be cool. What is also cool is, so DK Books do a lot of like ultimate guides and encyclopedias and stuff. Lots of different, you know, there's actual real world sciencey stuff for kids. They've done these for Lego. They've done them for Star Wars. Coming out very soon is Warhammer 40,000, the ultimate guide, which is like a visual encyclopedia for all things Warhammer 40K, written by Gav Thorpe and Guy Haley. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
You know, it's maybe aimed more at kids, perhaps. But, you know, it's going to have photographs and models in there. It's going to have lore. I think that'd be a nice little thing.
Yeah, it does sound quite good.
Yeah, I think if you're new to the hobby or you're thinking about delving in and I think it could be a nice little thing to pick up and read.
Yeah. We also have Darktide the Card. We also have Darktide the Card Game coming from Cubicle 7 this summer. Cubicle 7 have put out some good Warhammer-related card games, and their latest one is based on Darktide. It's a cooperative card game for 1 to 4 players. So if you wanted to play it between like gaming sessions or at the end of a club night, I forget what the last one was called. It was a Warhammer Fantasy based one, based around the Civil War in the Empire, and that was a really quick, fast paced game. And I suspect that this might be a reskin of it for Darktide. But yeah, it looks really fun. Also, for the more I guess spendy hobbyist, Weta Workshop are doing a scale figure of Abaddon the Despoiler. I believe it's a 1-6 scale model. So how big is Abaddon? About 8 foot. So you're talking like what? About 1.5 foot tall scale model of Abaddon.
And the detail. I mean, they showed some pictures and it looks glorious.
Yeah. I
mean, almost taller than me.
I was going to say it's nearly as tall as Andy. They also do a 1-6 scale Space Marine as well with a light up helmet. I haven't looked at the price of these, but I'm guessing four figures.
That's pencil. Yeah, it's got to be, hasn't it?
Yeah, but you know, if you're... yes, £1,399. But you know, for the hobbyist who's got everything, why not add a 1-and-a-bit foot tall Space Marine to your collection? Displate have also been putting out some limited edition posters with an old world theme. So I've seen Displate advertised on a lot of like YouTube adverts and stuff. But essentially they're metal artwork that have magnetic mountings on the wall so you can swap them out. They do a really nice one, which is a two-part one with the Bretonnian and Tomb King artwork. Because if you don't know, both those boxes, if you put them side by side, make a full piece of art, you can get those as posters, and I'd be very tempted to put them on my hobby room wall.
Yeah, I've seen these. They're really nice. I think I might be getting a couple. When I've moved the geek room into its new room, I might have to get one or two of these. They're really nice quality.
Yeah. We'll rattle through the rest. There's a lot on here, but there's Just Daring Terminator action figures. Oh, yes. The Warhammer Art Range is getting some new images from recent books. We've also got a McFarlane Toys Space Marine, Blood Angel and Gene Stealer. And did you know that we are nearly on issue 500 of White Dwarf? And there's going to be some Warhammer merchandise about it. Presumably he'll have a figure because other milestone ones he's had a figure. But I reckon they're going to go all out and have, you know, hoodies and artwork and all sorts of stuff for the 500th White Dwarf. So yeah, was anything on of that on your shopping list then, Dave?
I like looking at the display cases. I thought they were really cool. I think you're really going to have to like a model to get one, but they're very nice. I think that was my pick of today's reveals.
Nice.
I want Abaddon.
You want Abaddon, a big Abaddon.
Jay wants a Chaos model. Is that what I just heard?
I want Abaddon so that I can sit him down and talk to him about what happened on the Ventral Spirit with Sanguinius.
You're not the Messiah, you're a very naughty boy. yeah, and also there's some whispers and rumours that we've heard as well. Leaked onto the internet, and we're not going to share it, but I'm sure you can find it if you know where to look. There's been what looks to be a Pushfit Skaven leakage. Ooh. Now, we know that rumoured in the 4th edition box are Skaven. Now, Dave, you were the least excited about this from us three.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts?
Odd, isn't it? So, I mean, it appears to be a new plastic weapons team, which is something that the Skaven do drastically need. I don't know, Matt. I mean, from the image that we've seen and compared to the models we get nowadays, I don't know. I was just a little bit disappointed. I mean, so, obviously, it could be when we've seen the full kit and it all built, it'll probably be the best since sliced bread. But just on first glance, I was just a little bit underwhelmed.
So it looks to be a Rattling gun. What does a current Rattling gun look like? It's just a dude with a Gatling cannon, isn't it?
Two rat dudes.
Well, this looks like to be a guy in a seat with a Gatling cannon and then underneath it, like a hamster wheel, like powering it.
Yeah.
It sounds amazing.
We'll see when we see the full model. I mean, I'm very excited for plastic weapons teams. Don't get me wrong. I'm really looking forward to adding to my Skaven.
Yeah, so we'll hopefully we see more of that. And obviously we've got our top three later on where we're talking about what we want to see in AOS. And a very last little bit of news. There's been a whole host of events at Warhammer World go up. They're possibly sold out by the time you listen to this, but hopefully you can still get them. But there's some cool narrative events. There's a lot of Blood Bowl going on. Another Horus Heresy One Dayer, which was super popular last time, along with a couple of events for younger audience. So if you are, you know, a youngling who's into Warhammer and wants to try an event for the first time, they've got the Legion Recruits and the Chamber Initiates at Warhammer World, which are one day events where you go, you play some games, and your parents are encouraged to come as well, because they've got a My First Model competition for parents and guardians to enter too, which gives them something to do while they're there. I think that's quite nice. Like, Jay, I could see like Amy taking the boys to something like that, and she's still having something to do.
Maybe not Amy. I'll take him.
You'll take them. Or, you know, if maybe you don't read the event plaque properly, Andy, you never know.
Why is everyone so much younger than me?
I'm better playing than me.
But yeah, if you haven't done an event before, and especially if you have got a younger person who's maybe into the hobby, highly recommend them, because the events team are really good guys. So yeah, that is all this week's news, Dave.
Excellent. Plenty to get through there. Still chuckling at the Andy reference there. Yes, great. Okay. That isn't quite all the news this week, though, because there are some tasty, tasty reveals to chat about. So let's grab a fresh brew and we'll be right back. So our attention turns to what happened at the weekend over in Nottingham. It was Warhammer World's store anniversary. So they threw open the doors to ticket holders. I think they were free tickets, weren't they?
Tickets were free. So I guess the event is, I keep calling it an open day. It isn't technically an open day, but it's a similar kind of format. With the open days, they often sold a ticket for like, it was about £5. It wasn't much. This was a bit different. Tickets were free. You still had to, quote marks, buy them on Eventbrite. I think that was just to handle numbers. And they had two different sessions during the day, an early one and a late one. And essentially, it was the kind of stuff that you do at an open day. They had, you know, paint stations and hobby stuff going on, and you got a discounted entry into the museum, and they also had Kill Team Live running as well, where the guys had been busily working all week to turn the offices of Games Workshop into a Kill Team environment, which by all accounts was amazing. But they also had some cool reveals, didn't they, Dave?
They did indeed. So we're gonna run through these, starting with the Age of Sigmar map.
Yeah, so this year has been a lot of stuff that I've wanted for a long time getting released, and I kind of running out of stuff that is on my wish list now. So back in Silver Tower, I believe, we had a character that was a member of the Dark Oath, and since then we've had a few like characters here or there, but you've never been able to do a full Dark Oath army, and I think they're one of the more interesting additions to the Slaves of Darkness range. Well, we saw a new kind of warband based around the Hammer and Bolter episode Monsters, which is about the Dark Oath, and they've taken those characters out of the episode and put them together as a little kind of like warband, which is really cool. There's a, like a monster thing with horns, which is very Princess Mononoke, I'd say, Jay.
Yeah.
And obviously we've got the vibe that we've seen on the other Dark Oath models, where they're basically Warhammer Barbarians, the concept of the old Marauders, but given a bit of an Age of Sigmar, you know, twist.
And I think they've got much more depth to them than just Barbarian as well. Like you say, you know, some of the models are like shamans almost and things.
Yeah, so really, really cool. So we saw this kind of warband revealed, and then today they've expanded on this with the Dark Oath army set. So it is going to be, I think, the second kind of battle tome supplement for Age of Sigmar.
Yeah.
The first one being the Uruk one with the new war pigs and stuff. This one, it looks really, first of all, the artwork is absolutely gorgeous. More kind of like I don't know, gothic fantasy that you normally get for Age of Sigmar.
Yeah.
And all the models look absolutely amazing. I suspect the supplement's probably going to be a stopgap, and then when we get a Slaves of Darkness book come out next time, probably for 4th edition now, I suspect like the old Marauders and the Marauder Horsemen will be put into the old world stable and retired for good. That's not necessarily a bad thing, because these models are gorgeous. We've got the Dark Oath Chieftain on War Steed. This is a really angry horse with a skull mask. Terrifying.
Yeah, all he wants is an apple.
he can't even eat an apple with that mask on, can he? He's not a happy looking horse, is he?
He's not.
But this guy looks really, really cool. And they've said that the Dark Oath is kind of like a dark analogue to the Cities of Sigmar.
Mm.
You know, this is like an evil free guild cavalier marshal. He looks really, really cool. And he's got options of heads as well. You can have him bareheaded. You can have like a Bane style mask on him. Or you can go full skull head, because if you're, you know, in debt to the Chaos Gods, you just go full Chaos, don't you?
That was I was just about to say my favorite head option is that third, that almost, I mean, they've painted like a metallic kind of skull, haven't they? So yeah, that looks awesome.
He's also got a lot of different heads on his belt that you could swap out, maybe.
Yeah,
he has. Yeah, he obviously collects them, doesn't he? Everyone needs a hobby. Some of them than others. So he's really cool. But my favorite model in the box is the Wilder Fiend. This is very Hayao Miyazaki and Nightmare Fuel all in one. I'm not even sure what it is. I think it's essentially a Dark Oath, demon prince, I guess. Somebody who's maybe walked the path to glory a little too far and been turned into a horrific beast.
Yeah, it says here, the Wilder Fiend is what becomes of a powerful mortal champion whose ambitions outstrip their abilities.
And you know, I quite like that. It's essentially, you know, that's, you know, a demon spawn, prince slash chaos spawn, isn't it?
Yeah.
But maybe a spawn with more semblance of, you know, what they are. It just looks gorgeous, doesn't it?
I do like this model. I really like this model. But yeah. I think what I really like about this model is all the little talismans and tokens and things like littered about. He's like, he's wearing them around his arms. They're like scattered on the scenic base that he's on. I really like that.
Yeah, and it looks like he's got a couple of heads as well, which is, we were chatting about this off camera earlier. A lot of the Warhammer kind of boxes that are bringing out, they are very much geared for multiple boxes sometimes, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this guy looks beautiful. We've also got the Dark Oath Marauders. These are reimagining of the old Marauders that we all know and love. What's cool about these is that I think they come on sprues of 10, with 5 male ones and 5 female ones and 30 different heads. So you can have, you know, a big army of them and they'll all look different.
Do you know, this might be slightly controversial, but I really like all of this range. Like the army box are really cool. But I actually think out of everything, these are my favourite miniatures from the army set. Like over the Wilder Fiend and the characters. I just think like the core troops look so good, which is really important because obviously you're going to be painting more of these than anything else.
That's the thing, isn't it? Say if, you know, these are presumably battle lined, presumably you can have 3 squads of these in your army, you're going to be painting at least 30 of them, so you want them to be, you know, decent models, don't you?
Yeah, these are really nice.
Yeah, I really like them. And then finally, we've got the Dark Oath Fell Riders, who again are a new take on the Marauder Horsemen. And again, these are brutal looking horses with the angry like face masks they've got. And again, the same aesthetic as the guys on foot. I would bet that there's going to be some interchangeability across the heads of these and the other kit as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, really, really nice. I very much want to build some up. It does mention that there's some weapon options on these as well. You can give them javelins or swords. So again, if you picked up 2 boxes, you might be able to, you know, make a small force out of them. I mentioned they are coming in a army set that does come with the Dark Oath Battle Tome. It's only 28 pages. It only has the 4 new war scrolls. but it does expand on the options in the Slaves of Darkness book. So I imagine there will be a new, you know, sub-faction that lets you lean into that Dark Oath stuff. And there is quite a lot of Dark Oath stuff. I tallied up. I've got 900 points of Dark Oath models already. So nice. That add that to the stuff in this box. And then you might need to add in some, you know, Ogroids or something, because they probably fit the theme a bit better. You could probably do a 2,000-point army of Dark Oath, and I think that'd be really cool. And I do wonder if next edition we see something a bit like the Uruk book, where we get Slaves of Darkness, Dark Oath, and I'm going to put a out there bet on Beasts of Chaos in the same book.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah, so that was really cool. Now, that was one of my favourite reveals. And normally that would be like me done, like, yeah, amazing, I love it. But something ridiculous just came along that knocked the Dark Oath out of the park. Now, Blood Bowl is no stranger to ridiculous teams. We've got the Snotlings, we've got the Goblins. But what if you're a Blood Bowl player and Snotlings are far too serious for you? And you need something that is just a little bit sillier, that has a positional that is a fox with a ball in its mouth. For those people, those very special people, who I do, you know, respect and want to join the members of immediately, out of the blue, there is a gnome team for Blood Bowl. They have got badgers. They have got geese. They've got little, like, snails and squirrels and foxes. It's just glorious.
I like the new tree man with them.
They do, yeah. A new tree man to go with the gnomes too, with a little boot up in his branches.
I didn't know what to think or say when I saw them. I absolutely did not see these guys coming. I mean, we were talking about, because we saw that geese on Warhammer Community like a week leading up to it, and we were talking about, like, you know, where could it possibly be? You know, what is it? Is a Sigmar thing? Is it, you know, I think somebody did mention Blood Bowl, but none of us mentioned gnomes.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the picture. I've seen the models in the flesh and they're glorious. I need it for the animals. It's all about the cute critters, isn't it? The foxes are amazing. So my girlfriend's dog Poppy looks a little bit like a fox, and I've already said I need to paint these up because I can, you know, name a fox Poppy and play Blood Bowl with it.
Yeah, go for it.
I've got a feeling even if these are terrible in game, people are going to buy this just to paint up.
Yeah, they're very, very fantasy, and I think there's going to be a lot of people who will enjoy painting these guys just for the heck of it. And you know, if I ever go to a Blood Bowl tournament, I'm playing gnomes. I'm just going to shake their hand and let them win.
What's funny about these things is gnomes, they've never had a Blood Bowl team before, right?
No.
No. And Blood Bowl is set in Warhammer Fantasy, right? Mm-hmm. It's set in the old world, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, so gnomes are a legitimate part of the old world, then, I guess.
So, yeah, gnomes were introduced in one of the Cubicle 7 Warhammer Fantasy roleplay books.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I think they've come from roleplay, and then some mad person in the Specialist Game Studio has gone, yeah, people are asking for Tomb Kings and Chaos War for Blood Bowl, but you know what we need? Gnomes.
Mental. Absolutely mental. I don't even know what else to say.
They're just ridiculous. I love it. And if that's not gnomey enough for you, they've also got a star player who's a gnome fisherman.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Rodney Roachbait, the legendary star player of the Altdorf Park Anglers.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, he's a fairly unorthodox player. He uses a fishing net to catch fishing rod to catch the ball.
Excellent, absolutely excellent. I mean, it is a cool rule, and it is a really cool model as well. I just don't know what to say.
I love his special rule, catch of the day. Once per half, if he's within 3 squares of the ball, he rolls a d6. On a 1-2, nothing happens. On a 3+, he just hooks the ball with his line, and then he can run off and score.
Get squashed by a black orc.
Yeah, he's probably not scored. Just die horribly. But yeah, this is a kit that I never knew I needed or wanted, but I need it now. Yeah. So going back into slightly more like not mental news, we also saw a brand new custody. The Shield Captain, I believe he is.
Does it have a badger on its base?
Doesn't have a badger, no, and it doesn't have a fox, which makes it a less exciting reveal. Jay,
go back to the gnomes.
You've painted a lot of custodians. What do you think of this new guy?
I mean, I like him to start with. I do think he's a nice model. I think custodians, there's only so much you can do with a custodian. And I really like the Blade Champion that they made recently. Well, I say recently. I think that was one of the latest custodian models we had. Because there's only so much you can do with a genetically engineered super warrior clad in gold armor. They're all characters anyway. So I do sort of think that you struggle to do. But I do like the direction this guy's gone in. It almost very Spartan like look.
Yeah.
His spear looks really, really cool, although I think he looks a bit on the chunky side. I think they could have been a bit more elegant with it. I don't know. I love the base, standing on this sort of marble pillar. I don't know whether I'm a fan of... I don't know. Personally, I think I would have liked to have seen a Terminator. Like, we've got the Aquilin Terminator armor, and we've got the... what's the other one, Andy? You'll know. The Aquilin and the... Alaris, yeah. Because we've got a lot of Shield Captains and Blade Champions wearing the regular sort of auric armor. And this is another captain wearing auric armor. It's a nice enough model.
For me, the most exciting part of it was the motor gun that's on his spear. Because that's something that's been missing from custodies for a very long time.
Well, it has a bit of punch as well. Range 12, melter 2, 1 attack, hits on a 2, strength 9, AP minus 4, D6 damage. That's going to sting, isn't it?
Yeah. But that's what custodians need, really. We need some anti-tank that's not... Like, the axes are fine. You've got the melter missiles from the jet bikes, but I think that's the only plastic kit that comes with a kind of anti-tank.
In saying that as well, Melter's not really the anti-tank it used to be as well. I mean, it's got a lot of AP, but Strength 9, there's quite a few vehicles rocking around.
It's got Melter 2, though.
Yeah, so it's doing D6 plus 2 damage at 6 inches.
But like you say, it has to get past that toughness, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of toughness 10 tanks, so you're going to be wounded on 5s with one attack.
I like his shield. I think that's really smart.
Oh, yeah,
his
shield's really nice.
And I like the sort of, I think I prefer the helmeted version with the crest. And ironically enough, that helmeted version, that doesn't look too dissimilar from the Alaris Terminator head either.
I mean, maybe it's one that you could kit bash with one of those Terminators, Jay.
Yeah, potentially, yeah. I mean, there isn't a dedicated Shield Captain kit. You build Shield Captains out of the Alaris custodian or the warden kits, so you know, this being a dedicated Shield Captain kit, you know, he's quite cool. I mean, I just think they're a bit limited really in the sort of style of a custodian. There's not that much variation in them, I don't think.
Yeah, now the interesting thing, this is something we've heard rumored that every like release this year is going to be either first in a army set or a battle force, and the reveals that we saw Saturday pretty much confirms those rumours. This is something we've seen more and more over the last year with, the Dawnbringer boxes and stuff like that, where new miniatures tend to be in a bundle box, which, you know what, I've not got an issue with. If you just want the model, you can wait for a bit. They do have heavy discounts on these Battle Force boxes and the like. The one that this character comes in, which presumably isn't too far off, contains the codex, I believe.
No, it doesn't.
So it contains the new Shield Captain. You've got 5 Custodian Wardens, 6 Alaris Terminators, and 6 Dawn Eagle jet bikes. Which, if these were about, I don't know, we're going to put 130 quid. I don't know how that translates into custodies models, guys. Are they about 30 quid a box?
I think they are, aren't they?
It's been a while since I've purchased any custodians, actually. Let me see if I can get the thing up.
It's probably about 140 quid's worth of stuff, realistically.
So maybe 120 for the box. So you're probably going to get the Shield Captain free, aren't you? Basically. Yeah. So I don't think that's a bad box. I mean,
£40 for five Custodian Guards, £37.50 on the Games Workshop website. A unit of free jetbikes is £37.50.
Okay, so but you were talked about £160 plus the character. So if the character's like £20, £180, yeah, you're probably getting a box of jet bikes free then if it's £140. If it's closer to £120, you're getting quite a lot free in that box then. Now, obviously, if you just want that character, then you're probably better waiting. If you're a new Custodes player, though, I think that's a good one. Getting them in like Jay, you've got a big Custodes army. Would you want to get this big box or would you just wait for the guy by himself?
So for me, with a big Custodian army now, I would just wait for this guy by himself. But I, like you say, I've got a large Custodian army. I don't need any more Custodian Guard. I don't need any more Dawn Eagle jet bikes.
Yeah, but someone who's maybe, you know, starting out, I think that's a great buy, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you could add this to the combat. Is it the combat patrol or whatever it is? The combat patrol. So, you know, you get some Sister Silence, some free bikes and a squad of Custodian Guard. Add that to this. You got a nice little army there.
Yeah, that's cool. And then the Codex is going to come out along at the same time. Now, this Codex does still have Custodes and Sisters of Silence in it. So, unfortunately, I don't think we're seeing a split there. I'd have hoped to have seen Sisters of Silence Wave 2, but who knows? Maybe that'll be a Heresy release after Soul of Exilia. Mm-hmm. It's a shame. They feel like the redheaded stepchild of the Talons of the Emperor, don't they?
They do, yeah.
So that's very cool. But Dave, your jaw drops. I'm going to leave this one with you to talk through the final reveal.
Yeah, so just recently I've been feeling the orcs. It's an army that I've fancied for a long time, 40k. Last year I did my guard. This year it's the turn of my other...
The age of man is over. It's the time of the orc.
Exactly. So I've been really enjoying building and painting the orcs. And we obviously saw the silhouette of this. I think it was on the 1st of January, wasn't it? And even then, like, it looked big, but nothing prepared me for the model they revealed at the weekend. So this is a brand new Big Mech. He's decided to strap himself into some kind of suit with a choice of options in weaponry, and he looks amazing. I mean, you saw him in person, Matt. Is he as big as he looks?
He's fairly chunky. I'd heard rumours that this guy was bigger than a Death Dread or something. He's not quite that big, but he is a chunky boy. He's probably on par with Gazgul.
Yeah.
I just think he's watched the Votann Thunderkin walk around in their exosuits. That's what that looks to me. It looks like an orcified Votann Thunderkin.
It does, doesn't it? Mm. It does. So what's really cool is he comes with a few different options. So for range... He's got a custom Mega Blaster as one option, which is, you know, safe option. Couple of shots. I think that's -4 D6 damage. Or you can trade that for a Tractor Blaster, which is a one-shot gun that is strength 10, -2 AP, D6 +1 damage. But the most interesting part of this weapon is its anti-fly 3+ and devastating wounds as well. Now, the only problem is it's only one attack and it's an orc, so you're hitting on fives. I know quite a few people online have sort of been speculating over this. I think also when we talk about something in a moment, I think there's probably going to be a detachment which is going to favor this guy in the new book. You might be able to sort of boost his ballistic skill that way. But I mean, that Tractor Blaster, I'm gotta get one of these and build it with that because it looks amazing, doesn't it? It's such an awesome looking weapon. Might not be the most competitive choice, but looks superb. And then in his other sort of mechanical arm, you've got a choice of close combat weapons. So there's like a claw, or you can trade that for a drill, which looks amazing, which I think is how I'm going to build mine. Not only does he have these two weapons, but he's also got something called a shock booster strapped on his back, which looks a little bit like the end of the Big Mech with shock attack gun. But what this means in gameplay terms is it allows him to reroll advanced rolls, and basically he can move through terrain without any problems. It's like almost like teleporting him slightly further forward. It's a shame you can't like redeploy and stuff with him unless it's like a stratagem that allows you to do that. But yeah, that is so cool. Like the model is just amazing. Andy, I think you like the orcs, don't you? What do you think of this guy?
He is very orky. Like, he's a proper orc. I don't want to use the word scientist because that's the wrong word. Mech. It looks awesome. I'm a big fan of the mech with the shock attack gun. Mm. And this just looks like it's that next level. Mm-hmm. it does look really cool, but yeah, I do wonder which version you'd really want to go for. The tractor cannon sounds cool, but again, one shot is a bit. But then, you know, if he hits on fours, that's not a bad, you know.
No.
If he's,
no,
let's say, right. 60, 70 points, that's not a bad. It's very orky, so.
The Anti-Fly 3 Plus helps as well because, you know, the Drakari and stuff have been very popular with the new detachment. So being able to pretty much take out any of their vehicles on the 3 Plus to wound with devastating wounds.
Tau battle suits as well. I know we don't see an awful lot of flyers, but they're in trouble. You just got to hit. But that's your way, isn't it?
He's got a little targeting servo skull on his shoulder that might be able to help him.
That's true. The only thing I kind of would have liked to have seen some sort of shoulder mounted like Gatling cannon or something. That would have really finished it off. But he's an absolutely amazing model. And I can't wait to pick him up.
You can never go wrong by adding another gun to an orc model.
Absolutely. That's what he needs. It's what he needs. So similar to the Custodes, the first time you're going to be able to obtain this guy is going to be in an orc battle force. So in this, not only do you get the new Big Mech, you also get 10 boys, which I believe are the sort of single build kit that they did when the last Orc book came out. You also get a truck and you get 10 looters, which of course you can build as looters or as burner boys. And then you also get a stomper. A stomper. I mean, that's bonkers. I don't know if they're just not selling many of these. Again, the internet is kind of speculating that maybe we'll see a points reduction in the stomper. Maybe it'll be a bit more of a viable unit. I personally think they just wanted to put a big stompy robot in this box and sell some stompers and hopefully see some more on the battlefield.
It's quite thematic with the mech.
It's thematic. It's called Stomper Boys, which you alluded to. Maybe that's a detachment they can take as well, which makes Stomper's good. You've got a lot of old kits in there. Stomper's really old now. The looters are really old. Arguably, the truck's an old kit too. So it's one of those where maybe they can push the value with how old they are.
Yeah.
I mean, how much is the Stomper these days? 80, 90 quid?
Yeah. I think there's going to be an awful lot of saving to be had with this box.
Yeah. Again, awful lot of saving. And again, it's if you want all the content, I'll be picking one of these up because I want the new guy and I haven't actually got a Stomper. So I think it depends on the price. I think this could be pretty tasty.
Well, I think I might have said to you, Matt, that I was hoping that if I carried on painting my orcs throughout the year, I'd like to end the year with a Stomper. Well, I might be getting one very, you know, much sooner than that.
Yeah.
And so that looks potentially like it's going to be great value, but looks like a really, really fun box. And then finally, of course, we saw the cover for the book, which isn't included in the Battle Force. That's on the way very, very soon. It'll have obviously the rules for the new Big Mech and all the detachments, all the stuff that we've come to love in the new 10th edition codexes.
The rapid release schedule has been crazy. And if you think this brings us up to probably, you know, just before the AOS forum drop, you know, we were chatting, me and Jay earlier, that this is all the kind of like spring releases. We've not even seen what's coming out this summer.
No, absolutely. Bonkers, absolutely bonkers. Well, that kind of wraps up all the reveals from the weekend. Let's just very quickly pick out our favourite. Matt, what was your favourite reveal?
Oh, my brain says Dark Oath, my heart says Gnomes.
Andy?
I'm going to go with the Shield Captain.
Cool, Jay?
I like the Gnome Tree Man.
Excellent. Well, mine's going to have to be that Big Mac. Hands down. Right, that brings our main segment to a close. We're getting towards the end of the podcast now, but we still have time for our top three, which is coming up next. And And so it's time for this week's top three. And for this week's top three, we're going to be talking about the top three things we'd like to see in the next edition of Age of Sigmar. Now, I'm going to pick on you, Matt, because you came up with this one. So, let's hear your top three.
Well, you've thrown me there. I was not ready. So, yeah, I think there's some cool stuff they could do for Age of Sigmar. Number three for me is add more factions. So the stuff that we've seen in the lore that I've got maybe models or just nods to that we haven't seen fleshed out into full factions. Chaos Dwarfs is an obvious one. The Kenothi is another one. I want to see them kind of like expand out in some of that stuff in this edition. Equally though, I'd like them to, those battle tomes that have maybe got a more limited kind of lineup. So the Fire Slayers, though they have had a few new models recently, and the Daughters of Cain, I'd like to see them get like crew level additions to their forces just to give them a few more toys to play with. My second choice, I want more Path to Glory. We, in third edition, they kind of bigged up Path to Glory and the fact that we're getting these Path to Glory supplements. And in the end, we only got the one Thundia book. Now, I suspect COVID may have had an impact on that. And I don't know how well it sold. Maybe it didn't sell so great and they scrapped plans for further ones. I hope that's not the case, though, and we do get some decent Path to Glory love. Now, to be fair, for the Dawnbringer Crusade, there's some amazing Path to Glory content in there, including a full-fat update of Triumph and Treachery. I don't think I've even talked to Jay about this yet, but everything that was in the original Triumph and Treachery has been ported to Age of Sigmar. Ooh. Full fat. It's the exact same rules. You've got no battle tactics or grand strategies, Jay. It is just backstabbing. They've actually improved it as well, where in the original Triumph and Treachery, you had the one currency. You got coins based on victory points that you could then bribe with. They've changed it a little bit now, where you've got victory points and command points. You get victory points for slaying units, the same as you did in Triumph and Treachery. You start the game with 50 command points, and you can never gain any more during the course of the game from abilities or from, you know, the start of the turn. What you're allowed to do, though, is use your command points and your victory points as a currency for bartering with other players and making deals.
Right.
The card system's also been updated as well, where previously you drew cards and they were like random abilities. Now you can buy those cards for command points. So you can clock, oh, Dave's just spent 10 command points buying some cards. He's obviously bought some good ones, so I'll keep an eye on him or try and make a deal. It's really, really good. And the cards that you can buy are the same as the old ones. Like if somebody targets you in the shooting phase, they're not allowed to target you. Or when an enemy casts a spell, you pick the target of that spell. It is amazing and a super fun way to play Age of Sigmar if you've maybe fallen out of love with the grand, you know, strategies and stuff. So I hope that we see that baked into fourth edition or as a standalone expansion. You know, obviously the Dawnbringers content is still going to be valid in the same way that the, you know, ship combat is for 10th edition. But I do think that deserves a standalone box with cards and stuff in there. It'd be amazing.
Yeah.
My number one hope for the new edition of AOS is that they don't worry too much about events. Don't try and build a game that's designed for tournaments, because I don't know what it is about the new edition of 40K. I just think it's maybe losing a little bit of the magic because it's obviously geared for tournament play. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
Yeah, exactly the same.
I really like the new edition of 40K. I don't know if I completely agree with that, but what I would say is, when I play Age of Sigmar, you always seem to, with certain armies, you always seem to play the same lists. I don't know if that's a balance thing, but I'd like to see.
Thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I'd like to see other units see some board time by being more competitive, I guess.
But you, arguably in AOS, you do get that with the changing General's Handbook that has a different focus. I guess my number one choice is just don't try and make the game into a video game that's super balanced, because it's not going to work, and you might just lose a little bit of magic by doing that. But yeah, that's my top three.
Good shout, good shout. Jay, let's go over to you next.
Okay. So, yes, it's no secret. I haven't had any sort of motivation to play Age of Sigmar. I don't think I've played it properly since second edition. I don't really think I've given third edition much of a shot. I think I played it early on. But one of the main sort of drivers for me that sort of turned me away from it was just the speed of the sort of the change in the game. It was quite rapid, and trying to keep up with the general's handbooks and different ways of scoring battle tactics and grand strategies and da-da-da, it felt less like I was playing, and this is a completely subjective personal view, less than I was playing a miniatures war game, and more like, you know, half the game was actually trying to understand what the game was. In that sort of view, I'd like to see almost a different way of how they construct the missions, the battle plans, as I call them. You know, it's very objective focused, but I'd like to see some change. You know, maybe take something from Warhammer Fantasy, capturing an enemy's standard, slaying an enemy's warlord or something like that, rather than moving around objectives, just a different sort of score. It may then make you think a bit differently about how you construct armies as well, so that's my number three, just a mix up of the scoring sort of system for Age of Sigmar. And sort of tying into that a little bit, I guess, is a different way of building the armies. So this is something that Warhammer 40k has come back to in 10th edition, and that's allowing characters to join units rather than acting independently with auras and things like this. So maybe they just affect the unit they're sort of attached to. and then my number one choice is similar to Matt's, is new armies. It's always a good way to get back into a game, is if you see a model ranger and an army come out that really sort of takes your fancy. So Matt mentioned Kanoffi. I've really been looking forward to see what they do with Malarian and the Shadow Elves. So that's my number one.
Excellent. Some strong shouts there. My third choice is basically what Matt said in regards to balance. I would like to see, you always tend to see the same units on the battlefield. I know General's Handbook kind of mix it up, but very quickly when a General's Handbook comes out, as Matt was, you know, uses the term, there's a cookie cutter list appears, a new book will land, and suddenly like everybody's taking dragons or whatever. So I'd like to see some more competitiveness from other units in armies, so we can see some more mixed lists.
Do you think that's a symptom of the sort of tournament focus that the game appears to have?
Yeah,
I mean, probably. If you look at like Horus Heresy, for example, there are some legions, Imperial Fists, Iron Warriors, that are very strong, but you still see lots of people take lots of different legions to tournaments and events,
yeah,
because they're fun to play.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, there's probably a really, really strong, I'm using Imperial Force because I know Imperial Force, the Stone Gauntlet, you know, which is, if you want to win every single Horus Heresy game you ever play, you build around that Stone Gauntlet, you load it with apothecaries, it almost cutty cutter, like Matt says. But I've played loads of Imperial Fists, and I've played lots of different Imperial Fist armies. I don't know, is it just the mindset of Horus Heresy players against Age of Sigmar players, or is it, I don't know, because I mean, Matt, you play a lot of Age of Sigmar games with Stacey, and yeah, you don't necessarily take the strongest lists. Is it so one-sided? You know, if you turn up to a game with one of those lists that everybody's taking to events because they're just the strongest list, are you automatically guaranteed to win that game? Or can you still have an enjoyable game against someone who doesn't?
You can still enjoy it. And in defense of the battle tactics and grand strategies, yeah, there are ways around it. Like, I think I know you're not a fan of that side of it, but you've not had many games of the recent ones. And I think there's in the most recent General's Handbook, there's a battle tactic, which is pick three of your units and they have to be on different edges of the board, two of those units outside of your territory. So that doesn't involve you interacting with your opponent. So Stacey's got Sylvaneth. She's really good with that because they can do walk the spirit path to jump around the board, even if they get an overwhelmed in a straight fight. Where the, I think the earlier, the initial General's Handbook and the earlier ones were maybe a bit more geared towards kill something with a monster, which led to those monster heavy builds and stuff like that. I do think there is a, for 40k and AOS, like tournament mindset where you have to take something quote marks competitive and tournament geared. I'd like to see something in between Path to Glory and match play, with kind of like the list building of match play, but maybe the objectives of Path to Glory, which are a bit more freeform, aren't they?
Yeah.
There's more of a narrative scenario. And there's nothing to stop you taking the best of both, but I don't know whether it needs people like the official stamp on things to say, this is an okay way to play. You don't necessarily have to have symmetrical tables and all that that takes away from the atmosphere.
Well, moving on to my second choice, I've gone with more Path to Glory. I love the Season of War Thondia book. I think it's one of the best books they've done of this edition. Really was looking forward to another one, and it never appeared. What obviously helped with that is we did get to go to that amazing narrative event at Warhammer World for Thondia. I'd love to see something like that again. And I hope the new edition does bring more narrative Path to Glory books and build upon it like they've done with Crusade and 40K. So yeah, that's what I'm hoping for there as my second choice. And my top choice hasn't yet been mentioned. And, you know, I know a few people have their grumbles about these, but I love Endless Spells. And I think they've kind of, you know, we were getting endless spells of every faction at one point, and now all of a sudden we're not getting them anymore. We used to get expansions with them in. It's like they've just kind of, the rules are still there, but I don't know, we're not getting any new endless spells. They're kind of being pushed to a side a little bit. And I thought that was one of the cool, unique things about Age of Sigmar. You had these cool endless spells you could cast on the battlefield, and you had a model to represent it. So, yeah, I want to see more endless spells. I want to see them come back. I want to see factions that don't yet have endless spells get endless spells. And in the same vein, faction terrain as well. Why have some factions got free terrain features that give them cool stuff and also a cool model, yet other armies, cough, Iron Jaws, don't have anything? I don't think that's quite fair. I think every faction should have its own little, its own little terrain piece that does something. I just think that'd be really, really cool. I don't know if any of you guys, you know, wish we had more endless spells or saw more of them in game.
I do like
the dwarf endless spells.
I mean, but the dwarves, the fire slaves, do have their invocations and stuff, so they have.
Yeah, it's always been a bit dodgy about our firelands.
But yeah, I like it. I also like faction terrain. I think there has been a shift away from that in both games recently.
Yeah,
which is a shame.
But it never really took off in 40k, but I think it did in Age of Sigmar, and it's just a shame that some factions just don't get either. So yeah, I'd like to see more of that. And before I wrap up my top three, one thing I do fear, and I hope they don't, is I hope they keep the random turn.
The double turn.
I think that just adds another element. I think it really makes it a different game to say 40k and stuff. So I hope that stays.
It's so unique to Age of Sigmar that I think it's pretty safe.
Yeah, I hope so, Andy. I really, really hope so. Andy, let's finish up on your top three.
So my top three, the third one's kind of, I mean, obviously all these are like based on our experiences and our thoughts and whatever. But I want to see changes to Mystic Shield and All Out Defense. Because for me, one of the feel bads of the current edition of Age of Sigmar is I've got this unit on a 4-up armor save or 3-up armor save. I Mystic Shield it. I All Out Defense it. And then you're like, okay, you're not save stacking, but at the same time, you are still save stacking. You know, like you got a 3-up armor save, you throw a Mystic Shield, you got a 2-up armor save. I mean, you throw out all out defense and it's like, okay, I've got a 2-up armor save that ignores minus one rend. And it's just like, it just doesn't need to be there. You know, if they made Mystic Shield reduce the rend of attacks that target the unit by one, I'd be super happy with that. And make all out defense like maybe minus one to the two wound rolls of attacks that target them, but then they're minus one attack because they're sort of locking shields but not, you know, swinging their swords or axes or whatever. I think that would be a cool little change, and I think it would be better for the game as a whole. My second choice is another one based on bad experiences. I know no one's really using like Nagash and stuff like that at the minute, but whenever I used to play Nagash, or if I ever played Lumina Throne Lords with Teclis, or you know, these big sort of powerful casters, and I just had my little, you know, 100 point wizard or whatever, there was almost no point in rolling dice to try and cast spells, because even if Nagash rolls, let's say, a 2 and a 3, well, most of the time he gets plus 3 to cast, so even a 2 and a 3, that's like an 8. So then you need a 9 to unbind it. It's just like, sometimes there was just no point in rolling the dice. So I kind of like what we've done with 40k with psychic powers, where they tie it into, you know, a particular phase, and it's kind of like almost like an ability that sort of goes off. I kind of like that, but at the same time, I do like that interaction between you and your opponent in almost like a mini game within a game.
Yeah, one of the things I didn't like about the new edition of 40k is that magic just became a passive aura, really, didn't it? The old world was worried that magic was going to disappear, and that's maybe the best of both worlds, where there's different abilities that are in different phases, but there's still a role.
They're a bit toned down as well, aren't they, in old world? It's not as oppressive.
Yeah. I'm just not happy with how magic currently is. Like I said, sometimes you come up against these powerful spellcasters and there's just nothing you can do. You might as well not. If you've got a couple of characters that are all wizards, you know, you're effectively negated just because of the mechanics of the game. So
I suppose on the flip side of that is, if I'd paid 900 points for Nagash and a little level one wizard keeps stopping him from casting, I'd be fairly annoyed. But I see your point, Andy.
Yeah, you look at Nagash and like, maybe he shouldn't get plus 3 to cast all his spells, because the power of Nagash is that he can cast 9 spells and your opponent can only try to unbind one. You know, it's a difficult one, isn't it? But I'd like to see some change to the way magic works in the game. And then my first choice, I think, is one that is long overdue. And that's Chaos Dwarfs. I like dwarves. I like chaos. You put them together, what's not to like? But I'd like to see a reimagining of chaos dwarves, not necessarily the old world ones. I'd like to see chaos dwarves, you know, potentially, you know, some have been infested by Nurgle, some are bloodthirsty and Khorne, you know, throw some wizards in there. Maybe they've got, you know, a bit of Tzeentch to them. And I don't know how a Slaanesh dwarf would work, but
long-tongued dwarfs.
Yeah, that might be a bit of an interesting one.
Nightmare fuel.
I'd like to see chaos dwarfs. I mean, they've been mentioned in the narrative a bit, and I'd like to see them finally come into the game.
Proper dispossessed dwarfs first.
No.
I actually don't think that's going to happen now, Jay, unfortunately. I think if you want that, you go to the old world.
Yeah, I'd like to see the chaos variety first, if I'm being honest. Order's got enough factions.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, in the lore for 40k in Age of Sigmar, for 40k we're getting more and more glimpses of the Dark Mechanicum, and in Age of Sigmar, we're getting more and more glimpses of the Chaos Dwarfs. Do you think we're just going to end up getting, there's going to be a year where we're going to get both and the world's going to explode?
So I'm fairly certain we're going to see the Chaos Dwarfs this year. And because the, if you look at all the factions for the old world, every single supported faction isn't really a supported AOS one, really. You know, you've got the High Elves and the Wood Elves and the Empire. A lot of them have had kits replaced in AOS. We've got the Orcs and Goblins again. Goblins is a bit of a grey area, but a lot of those old Orc kits have just been replaced in AOS, haven't they?
Yeah.
The weird ones, the Beastmen, where that's the only faction in the old world where all the models are available in AOS. Slaves of Darkness and Warriors of Chaos is a weird one because arguably in the book they use the old models, and I think that'll be the distinction there. Beastmen, it wouldn't surprise me if Beastmen aren't a thing in AOS anymore. Yeah. All of the legacy factions are ones where you can pretty much buy their entire range for AOS because they want to support them in AOS. So Dark Elves, for example, most of that range you can still buy. Demons, Lizardmen, all them. And again, the weird one there is Chaos Dwarves, which you can't currently buy, suggests that Games Workshop themselves want to do a Chaos Dwarf army for AOS rather than the old world.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a fair assumption. Absolutely. Some interesting choices there, guys. Obviously, the time will tell. You know, we're all pretty sure it's going to land this year. That's why we did this this top three, and it's going to be interesting to see what they do to liven the game up. Yeah, really, really looking forward to it. Hopefully, we'll see Skaven in the box. That'd be awesome.
Hopefully, we can convince Jay to play some games of their fourth edition as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, I've only really got two Age of Sigmar armies. I've got my Sylvaneth army, and I've got my Lumineth Realm Lords army. Now, I'd be quite sort of partial to adding units to both of those forces, really. If I look around the rest of the Age of Sigmar armies, there's not really anything else that jumps out at me like I want to start building, painting and collecting. I'd love to see Kernoffi. I'd love to see Shadow Elves. And I'd love to see Dispossessed Andy. But yeah, we'll see. But I mean, I think it has to... I'd like the game to be more accessible, but again, that's just a purely subjective personal view. It doesn't feel very accessible to me at the moment, but we are at the end of an edition, so who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? There is hope for the Dispossessed. The first wave of Cities of Sigmar pretty much replaced all of the human armies, but the Cities of Sigmar, even the current book, is all about those different mixed race armies. It wouldn't surprise me if the second wave takes all the dwarf kits, all the ones that still exist, they then get shunted to the old world, and we get a Cities of Sigmar style revamp for normal dwarfs in the old world, and have not Grimnir, the other fella,
Grungni
and his dwarfs as an addition to the Cities of Sigmar.
I'd be straight back in.
There you go, Games Workshop, if you're listening, if you want Jay to play Age of Sigmar, that's what you got to do. So you got to make that happen. So they are our top three choices, and we do have one final segment left of this week's podcast. It's the community choices, and that's coming up next. Okay, so before we wrap up this week's podcast, it's time to go through the community choices on what you would like to see in Age of Sigmar 4th edition. We're going to start over on Facebook with Simon Calver. His third choice is less power creep for new battle tomes. His second choice is a change to the charge rule, where you still have to move a certain distance if you fail a charge move. It's kind of like fantasy, that, isn't it? That's quite a good idea. And his top choice is smaller beast units for SOB. That's Sons of Bearmat, isn't it? Armies.
Yeah.
That's a good shout. Yeah, that'd be cool. Like some giant pets. Like giant doggos. That'd be cool. David Anderson has gone for a proper Dark Elf release. Malarian and Shadow Elves given a whole new lease of life as his third choice. The second choice is the reimagining / updated release of Skaven. They need some love. They absolutely do. And it sounds like they're going to get it. And his top choice is Something New with General's Handbook. I feel like the last one missed the fun factor that previous ones did. Fewer General's Handbook releases would be welcome as well. Agree with the fewer releases, like with Underworlds. I quite like the Primal Magic and stuff, but it felt like a bit of an add-on. But yeah, it'd be interested to see what they do with the next edition's kind of General's Handbook or whatever it's going to be. And finally on Facebook, Daniel Higgins has gone for, I can't pronounce things. Tyrillic Luminef plus Turion. Jay, do these words mean anything?
Yeah, Tyrion's faction, the Tyrionic. So we're thinking here, chariots, the more sort of military sort of. So obviously Teclis had all of the temples, the elemental temples, elementaria, what they were called, more magic focused. Although there was quite a few, you know, combat units there too. But yeah, Tyrion is your more standing army type.
Bunch military. People in the face.
Kind yeah, of. Yeah, that will be cool.
Malarian and big monster models, more please. Matt, what do we have over on Discord and X?
So on Twitter, Ricky says, a leader mechanic akin to 40k 10th edition. So leaders being able to join units and giving a boost to said unit. I quite like that. He's also not a fan of grand strategies, but that's a personal flavour. And he'd rather there not be any Battletome specific secondaries because some are a lot easier to score than others. I will agree on that. There's some of them where they're just a no-brainer in the Battletome, where the generic ones are a bit harder.
I just gave him...
That wasn't me subbing my top threes again.
Anonymous Rex, more faction terrain. It'd be nice to let all factions get their own bespoke terrain pieces. Again, I reckon that COVID might have affected that because a lot of the terrain was coming from China, wasn't it? I don't know if it's made in Nottingham now. Bespoke campaign territory maps for Path to Glory with associated lore and battle plans. Yes, you know what? Yes. A lot of the cool stuff they've done in Warcry, I'd like to see ported over to Path to Glory. You know, we've got the beginnings of that with Path to Glory and the terrain, the territories and stuff. But having a map based campaign thing, even if it's boxed or something, it'd be ace. And then Primal Magic to become a core part of the game. You know what? I really like Primal Magic, and I wouldn't be opposed to seeing that baked in as well because it had that gambling mechanic. So for those who don't know, essentially each player would roll a dice, and on a 4+, both players get a Primal Magic dice. After you've made your roll for a spell, you can choose to add your primal dice to the result. But as ever, there's always a downside. If you roll a double one, including parts of your primal magic dice, your wizard takes 3+d3 mortal wounds. So if you roll a 4 and a 1, you fail to cast. It is a big gamble to roll that primal magic dice. And in my experience, even though it's only statistically a 1 in 6 chance, there's a 9 out of 10 chance that your wizard blows himself up. Which is really fun.
I'll hook you with it.
G-Ambulance Service, controversially, would like to see us return to 4 pages of rules. Number 2, Plastic Legion of Asgore / Chaos Dwarfs. And number 3, the Stormcast Devastator faction with siege machines and tanks.
What? That would be bonkers.
I could see that.
Yeah. Adrian Hurst would like to see a Path of Glory supplement with an associated app that lets you track a map of territory and graphics for your stronghold and stuff. You know what? Back in the day, both Path to Glory and Crusade were promised for the 40k and AOS apps, and neither has ever materialised.
Never to be spoken of again.
This is a shame because they could do lots with that. And yeah. I'd argue that kind of stuff's better in an app than the match play stuff, but, you know, what do I know?
You could even get really smart, couldn't you? And the Warhammer events team utilize it in some way as well to put custom campaigns in that get updated over the course of a narrative weekend.
Yeah, it'd be ace. It's a shame that they haven't done it. More units for some of the factions that have only gotten heroes lately. And bin battle tactics. It's annoying and not remotely characterful or thematic. Another person that isn't a fan of battle tactics. Thankwall says shooting toned back, so bases block line of sight, etc. Battleshock made consequential but sensible. I quite like how it works in 40k where it turns off being able to score and stuff.
Yeah.
And a Skaven range refresh. Jem says it's the one thing that he wants, but he knows that he's not going to get. He thinks a new edition coming out every 3 years is too often. Dungeons and Dragons, for example, is just about to turn 50 and it's only on its fifth edition.
Yeah. And
we did have a 5 years release cycle for the core games, and they have accelerated a lot of stuff, haven't they? I mean, we talked about the extremes with the General's Handbook and Underworlds, but yeah, 3 years probably is a little bit too soon.
Doesn't feel like you have the book for 5 minutes, does it, sometimes?
Yeah.
Cough, my card book.
We've got more games in the mix now with the Old World, Heresy, 40k, AOS, and they normally have a year for like paints. Maybe we'll see that slow down a little bit just because there's so many games. Who knows?
Yeah.
Big Geordie Geek says an end to the double turn.
No!
It just irritates me when my opponent gets it and I feel blocked out of the game for far too long. Yes, it can impact you, but it means you need to be super careful when there is the potential of being double turned. I like it personally, but I know some people don't like it. And Chaos Dwarves give me evil stunties. And Katarina, yes. Katarina Aristov says better secondary objectives during missions that provide more interactive play. Yeah, it's all right to have some of them in there. One objective, two objective, more objectives, but don't have all of them around that. It'd be nice to have a bit of a mix. You mentioned this earlier, didn't you, Jay? That, you know, if you've got 12 of them, four of them may be revolved around getting objectives, but have one that involves taking a tower or taking flags, or it just means there's a bit of variety.
I also think as well that that can make the game a bit more immersive and, you know, rather than it being a bit abject, as I sometimes think it is. You know, if you're actually battling to grab someone's standard bearer, you can actually envisage that sort of thing happening on a battlefield. Whereas try and chase this objective that moves around three times and okay.
Yeah. Armies with limited ranges expanded to give more options. Some ranges have less than 10 kits. Yeah, that's a biggie. And then more narrative books released throughout the edition rather than at the end. Yes, I agree on this. We've started to see it in 40k, haven't we, Dave? You reviewed one recently. They tied it in with the Crusade stuff. The best stuff they do narratively and rules-wise, arguably, is normally those end-of-edition things.
Mm-hmm.
I still do those, but do them throughout the edition in addition to Battle Tomes and Codexes. I'd like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Good and job. Then over on Discord, Brian says, don't go too far away from the current rules. I think that's a good shout because there's potential that they could completely change the game engine. More varieties of missions rather than hold one, hold two, hold more. I'd like missions focused on a narrative and then the hold more battle tactics move to purely competitive tournament packs. Yeah. And the ability to customize characters, war gear, spells, artifacts, command traits, all costing points. We've seen that in 40k. It wouldn't surprise me if we see that. That stops some of the problems as well, where you can change the points of an upgrade and maybe encourage people to try different upgrades that way. And then JB, they would like more time to play AOS, somebody to play AOS with, and more time to play AOS.
Excellent choices. We should all choose that.
So yeah, that is all of them.
Excellent. Some really good choice to our last one. Yeah, as I said before, it's going to be an interesting summer, I think. See what they do. We just need to get Jay back into Sigmar somehow. Drag him back in. I'm sure there's some Sylvan F you haven't paid yet, Jay.
Or dragging him back in.
Dragging him back in. I almost forgot to ask the all-important question, Matt. What's the next top three?
Well, obviously, we've got this big celebration of Warhammer merchandise. We're going to do a bit kind of out of the box with this one. I want to know your top three dream Warhammer merch items.
Excellent.
The wackier, the better.
Got a couple in mind. So if you want to get your suggestions over early, you can do via our social media channels. If you want to let us know that Warhammer boxes is your thing, then yeah, get those in. And we will be putting a tweet and a message out just before the recording of the next podcast, if you wanted to reply to there, and then we'll read out as many as we can on the next show. I think we're gonna, I've already thought like three or four items. It's gonna be a great one.
I want the away kit for the Gnome Blood Bowl team.
Excellent. Right. Thanks guys for joining me this week. It's been a blast as always.
It's been a hoot.
Oh. It's a shame there's no gnome owls. There's no owls in that kit, was there?
Okay, it's been a honking great time.
don't know where I was going with that. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with the next podcast. Until then, keep an eye on spruceandbruce.com and our social media channels for all the latest goings on. And we'll speak to you all again very soon. Bye.
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 Thanks for listening to the Spruce and Bruce podcast. For more content, remember to check out spruceandbruce.com. And if you'd like to get in touch with us, send us a tweet at spruceandbruce or head over to facebook.com/spruceandbruce.